Hi guys, and welcome to episode 5 of the Breadwinners Business Podcast. I'm your host, Pori Kilfordy. This podcast looks into the lives of current entrepreneurs and business owners on how they have navigated their way to being the best they can be and what makes them tick. I look into their highs, their lows of their journey, and what helpful tips they can give. This week, my special guest is Parik O'Malley, a corporate business mentor and public speaker for over 25 years. With a focus on family businesses, Parik is also a published author and has featured on various national media platforms and has mentored some serious entrepreneurs. He's delivered in front of thousands of people and has mentored hundreds of family businesses over the years through his famous mentorship Schmack program. Let's get into episode 5 of the Breadwinners Podcast.
Parik, how are you? And thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Parik.
Parik, suppose it's like everybody here in across the world dealing with COVID-19 has been a little bit difficult. How has Parik O'Malley been dealing with it?
Yeah, it's been interesting. So it has, Parik. For 35 odd years, my job was dealing belly to belly or tummy to tummy with people. I used to run groups, and that ain't possible anymore. So we've had to pivot our business very quickly, and we've had to go from doing groups to literally doing them online. And I'm quite amazed to say that I should have done it 5 years ago. The technology was there; we just didn't use it. And now we had no choice but to go and do it. And it's amazing when your back is against the wall, Parik. It's a great motivator, so it is.
And that brings out characteristics in people as well, Parik, about when they're in that entrepreneurial journey of you have to adapt very quickly. Is that something, suppose, people are going to learn very quickly about themselves now that, look, they just have to get up and get on with it, dust themselves off and readapt?
Look at Parik, I mean, I think it's always been there. You'll find it in new products. When people bring out a new product, there's a certain amount of people, the early adapters, who go for it, who use it, who love it. And then there's another cadre of people who wait and see what happens. I think you're seeing that already. I think you've seen a lot of people actually make really significant changes in their business. I think others are going to wait and see. And sadly, I think some will be left behind. You know, that's just the way life is. And that's it.
Parik, we'll get you on the Breadwinners Podcast. Basically, you've been doing it for a long time now, 25 years. Tell us about your company and what exactly you do, first of all. And then we'll get into the nitty-gritty of how and why you started to do it.
Yeah, effectively, I help people and businesses grow. It's as simple as that. How I got into it, where do I start? My mother would have liked me to be a priest. I would have liked to be a doctor. And between the jigs and the reels, I ended up going to be I'm a great believer, Parik, that the key people who influence you in your life are really important. And every one of us meets certain influential people as we go through life. I was very lucky. My first job at 21 was selling jumpers from a company in Castlebar called Heritage Knitwear. And it was great. It was a startup company, and I had to do everything from selling to almost knitting the jumpers to packing them. And
good experience there, knitting jumpers.
And you know, I learned most of it in Donegal, the places like Kilcar, Donegal Design, McGee's at Donegal, Great Accounts in Sligo, all around the country. So at 22 years of age, I had a year apprenticed in the selling game, and you couldn't buy that. No MBA in the world would have been worth it. I learned so much. I'll give you an example. I'll always remember, I started work in about October, and the Christmas rush was coming on. Bear in mind, I was selling jumpers, and God rest his soul, a lovely man, Paddy Dooney, Dooney's shop in Sligo, it's still there. And I went in with about 3 dozen jumpers to deliver to Mr. Dooney, as I called him then. A beautiful man, and he said, come on over with me. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning. And he brought me over to a little pub in the main street in Sligo, across the way, And he didn't ask me what I wanted. And he said to the person behind the bar, he says, "We'll have two of my special coffees." And I wasn't even a drinker then, Porrick, but I had this, I guess what you'd call it, an Irish coffee with Mr. Dooley. I sure went straight to my head. And I didn't realize it till afterwards. So I loosened up hugely. Now, I would have known 30 of the best shops in Ireland. So within about a half an hour, he got every bit of information out of me. When they were starting their sale, how much were they pricing this jumper? What was the best-selling jumper? Where would they position it? And it was absolutely, and I learned a huge lesson that day. That man treated his suppliers well. And he treated them like God. And I would have done anything for Paddy Dooley. And you learn the lessons like that, so you did. You could never learn those in a book, Porrick, yeah? And I learned a few in Donegal as well. Well, I might be allowed to tell you this podcast, but, so that was introduced to selling. And I knew so much about selling. I'd set up the business. We'd about 33 accounts in Ireland. I then began selling to Germany and Japan and all over the world. And what the Americans, the Irish are the best salespeople in the world, Porrick, but the Americans are scientific about it. You can take an average, low-key person in America, you can give them a formula, and they will actually learn that, and they'll study it, and they'll master it. And I do believe that selling is both a science and an art, yeah? It's not all about personality, and it's probably not all about the formula. Somewhere in the middle is a mixture. So I learned that, and I became good at that. And what I discovered was when you become a bit of an expert at a certain thing, people want you. And I got into the consultancy game that way. I started helping other knitwear businesses. And because I had so many contacts and so much experience, I was able to help them get up to speed really quick. And I did that for maybe the next 6, 7, 8 years in the west of Ireland with knitwear companies. And I then moved to a company in Dublin, a company called Synectics. And it was a great learning experience. They were an American company based in Dublin. And what they actually did was they assumed the customer knew the answer. And it was a really brilliant thing. They didn't go in and say, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, you should do the other. They went in and they kind of, they interviewed the customer in such a way that the customer came up with their own solution. Fierce, simple thing, Porrick, but really, even to this day, it's not been done. And it's kind of facilitation skills. And I learned that art in Dublin. I worked all over the world for about 3 or 4 years, going into companies, and I'd know nothing about them. Companies like IBM, Pepsi, I'm not a technologist, I'm a mere BCom lad from Galway. But if you went in there with a blank flip chart and you were able to identify a problem, and if you were able to get people coming up with solutions to that problem, they'd come up with it themselves and they'd be saying, gee, your man of mine is a great guy. Do you know what I'm getting at? And I still believe it. I understand your wife's a teacher. The great teachers do that. The great teachers don't teach by telling or instruction. The great students learn by discovery. And I think the same is true in business, Porrick. I learned that in my years with Synectics, that if you could go into a company and if you could give them the confidence that the solution was there, and if they just literally gave themselves the permission to allow that solution to come out, it would do. So look, at the heel of the hunt, came back to live in Galway. I set up my own business, O'Malley Group, if you like. I don't know, 30 odd years ago. And I've been helping countries, helping companies the length and breadth of the country since. Now, is that giving you a bit of background to me?
It gives me a little bit of a background, all right. And that storytelling that I know that you're very accustomed to, it really resonates with me, because the story of a business and how it develops and the fact-finding mission. And obviously that has molded you as a person, Porrick, way back then when you realized those little traits, those questions that was being asked, and obviously they changed you to move into what you were doing, obviously.
Yeah, and you know, my mother used to be, God, she passed on at 93 about a year ago, but she'd be always saying, you know, well, when they asked me at funerals and weddings, what does Porrick do? She said, I don't know. And I didn't know myself, because the way I did it was kind of different from everyone else. But, you know, this interview, as your listeners will know, is happening during the pandemic. In my life, the busiest time in my life was during the last recession, maybe around 2011. And once again, a group of my clients, they were all in trouble. They'd borrowed money and the banks put the squeeze on, and they were in huge, huge emotional distress. And I always remember a guy ringing me one day, and he said, three or four of the lads, would you facilitate a meeting between us? And I always remember it. I did it down in Adair Manor in Limerick, and 12 people showed up. And they were in really serious condition, Pádraig. But I went around the room, and the only ground rule I had was, we're not allowed to be negative, or we're not allowed to self-pity. I don't mind you talking about your problems or your issues, but we got to frame them in a positive way. And, you know, that's all we did for 3 or 4 hours. But our mothers used to have an old adage that a problem shared is a problem halved. And by the end of that meeting, everyone in that room knew that a little bit of magic had happened. The circumstances hadn't changed. They were still owed. They didn't know how much they owed. Was it millions or hundreds of grand? But they had an opportunity to share the problem. And I always remember, I summarized it by saying, what's the one characteristic you need to get through this recession? And almost unanimously, Pádraig, they said, discipline. And I hated discipline. I know your wife's a teacher, but I was the most ill-disciplined kid. And people were always saying, if he had more discipline, he might have done something. And they said, if we only had a bit of discipline, we could get through this recession. And I said, it's a horrible word. I didn't like it at all. And some fella says, he says, what's the Irish word for discipline? And, you know, I always remember I had an uncle of mine, Uncle Stefan, and he'd always say to my mother, give me Pádraig for the weekend and I'll put smacht on his fishing. And smacht is a kind of a Connemara word, and it means discipline, but it's a lot richer, the Irish word. It means control or shape. I'll put shape or control or discipline on his fishing. And we call it smacht. And those guys said, we'd love to meet every month for a half day and discuss our problems in a kind of an open way amongst peers, amongst similar people who were in trouble. And you won't believe it, Pádraig, Donegal became a hotbed of it. We had 2 to 3 great smart groups in Donegal. We had them all over the country. And the interesting thing was, I think 300 people came through smart. And I can tell you that 280 of them are still not alone survived in business, but they're thriving in business. And the bottom line was, you need a little bit of discipline. First of all, you need discipline with your attitude. You can't be just listening to all of the negative stories on the news. You've got to have the discipline to sit down and say, who am I not going to listen to? And who am I going to listen to? Because if you would just allow social media in at you in this pandemic, you are not going to have the mental energy necessary to come through it. So that's what we learned. We learned to discipline our mind. We learned to discipline our habits. A half dozen good habits. And a lot of those habits, Pádraig, were physical things, like people started walking, people started getting fit. People started giving up drinking as much booze as they were drinking. They had the discipline to get their body right, their mind right, and then their character right. And I think that's one of the great things about the Irish, is our character. Character is something that's within. You know, the great General Norman Schwarzkopf, he said, I always look for 2 things in a soldier that I take to war. I look for competence and character. And he said, there's no problem finding competent people. You know, soldiers who run 100 meters in 10 seconds or whatever. Yeah. But he said, it's very rarely you'll find people with both competence and character. I think the people who are going to survive and thrive this pandemic will be the people with both competence and character. And that's why the Irish came out of the last recession so brilliantly, because we're literally full of character. And it's why I would be so hopeful that this pandemic, in a perverse way, and I know I'm probably shouldn't mention the date, but on the 29th of April, 2020, you know, it's hard to start pulling positives out of it. I think the Irish, and you can mark my words, in years to come, we will look back on this period and say, that's when we took off. That's when we showed the rest of the world what character we had. Our competence was never in doubt. We always are the best educated people in the world. What we now have is both competence and character.
You've mentioned your character a number of times there, and I just noted your mother, big impact on you, Pádraig, building that character within you. I know you're a character of characters, but I know you're smacked, and your programs are very, very disciplined, and very, not as in disciplined sitting in the corner, it's disciplined as in rituals and understanding the different basics that you have to implement to your business. But you as a person, that character there, was it obviously you've touched on it a wee bit, it wasn't always there, Pori.
I don't know. You mentioned my mother because she was the only blood relation I had for a long time. My father was dead before I was born. It was an unusual thing. And he died 2 months before I was born. Got a heart attack. So it was pretty rough on my mother. She was old school. She was a great business lady. She was a formidable lady. She was 5'11", big, strong lady. But I tell a story, and it's a true story. I'd gotten into the speaking circuit, if you like, 20-30 years ago, and I got a gig in Limerick with the Chamber of Commerce in Limerick, and I went down the night before to prepare and be in good state, and we didn't have mobile phones in those days, but I stayed in a hotel, and I rang Mammy the morning of the session. The session was on at 9:30. I rang her about 8:30, and she says, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in Limerick," and she said, "What are you doing?" Oh, I said, "I'm giving a talk to business people in Limerick." She said, "You giving a talk to business people? What would you know about that?" And she said, "How long is the talk?" I said, "It's about 3 hours." She says, "3 hours? What happens if you forget your lines?" And of course, I got real panicked. She says, "And what happens if they ask you questions you don't understand?" And she asked me all of these negative questions, and I just about managed to pull myself together. And I went in and I did the gig. And I remember driving home to Galway that evening, Porrick, and I says, "Something's got to happen here." And I went and I sat down with my mother, tough lady. And I says, "Like this now, man, I will never, ever, ever ring you again prior to doing a bit of work." And she got all huff huffy and said, "Oh, it's an awful way for son to talk to her mother." I says, "However, I will ring you every time after I give the talk." And it was an interesting thing. The reason she asked me those questions, Porrick, wasn't to put me down. The reason she asked me those questions was my mother had never stood in front of a group of people before, yeah? And immediately when she thought of me doing it, she put herself in that position and she got frightened. And she started asking me all of the things that were concerning her. And I say this because we're all surrounded by really powerful people, but who sometimes can bring us down without meaning to. Does that make some sense? And what I had to do was I had to limit my association with my mum. In other words, I wouldn't speak to her before seeing the bank manager or seeing something that she might give me a bit of fear about. And that worked brilliantly for 30 odd years, and I rang her every session afterwards. You know, oh, here's another one. I was going to Letterkenny one day from Galway. I always remember it, Sunday evening, and beautiful evening around maybe, I don't know, August time. And I was up around Mullaghmore there. Do you know the way you can see Mullaghmore? Probably between Grange and Sligo, yeah? Yeah. And next minute, the mobile rang, and it was me mother. So about 9:05, a lovely Sunday evening. And the mother says, "Where are you?" I says, "I'm on my way to Letterkenny, ma." "Mum, where are you?" I says, "I'm up outside Mullaghmore on the road to Donegal." "Oh, slow down." I says, "What do you mean?" She says, "Slow down. I know you're going too fast." I said, "Ma, what's wrong?" She says, "Oh, I'm looking at the news and telly here." And she says, "There's been an awful car accident." I said, "Gee, that's terrible. Where?" "Oh," she said, "Carlow." And here I was in a different province. I was up in Donegal. But Mammy had put, she was worried about me. She put the two together and she telling me to slow down. And it was a weird thing. The whole way up to Letterkenny, I was waiting for the accident to happen. Do you know what I'm getting at? So really, I'm making a point about my mum, but it goes about everybody, Porrick. We've got to be aware of the energy that people convey, and we've got to be able to harness and manage that.
And that's obviously comes with mindset management and self-talk and things like that, Porrick, as well. And I have to full disclosure here. I spent 2 days with you in Athlone, and we touched on that. And the only time I heard of those kind of words being stated before was maybe in a football dressing room about, you know, you can beat anybody when you put your mind to it. But bringing it into a business context, it was something that, as a business people or a business, some people don't really understand. And I know you've been probably hammering on about this for a long time.
Yeah, look at mindset. And funny, I was just thinking, Patrick, as you were talking, I remember that session well. I think we had Jimmy McGuinness speak to us that day, didn't we, Patrick?
That's correct. Yeah. Jimmy was there.
And it was really interesting. I drove home with Jimmy afterwards. And no, in fact, I drove him to Galway. Galway and Donegal were playing a league match that weekend. The pleasure of getting Jimmy in a car for an hour and a half, you know. And he always said a weird thing to me, you know, a really interesting thing. You know, I was asking him about Donegal had won the All-Ireland, you know, the year before, and they were flying high, and I was really, really interested to, you know, to find out how he brought them there. And he said, I learned it when I was a young guy in Kerry. And I said, what was the secret? Because being into business and mindset, I reckon there was a mental thing there. And he kind of turned around to me and he says, the reason Kerry were so good was they trained harder than anybody else. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, I was a student down there. And he says, we trained at 6 a.m, we trained at lunchtime, and we trained in the evening. You know, the exams were kind of second rate. He was with the crowd in Limerick, wasn't it?
NIH.
Yeah, but what it really was the Kerry footballers worked harder than anybody else. Now, that's an attitude. That's a mindset. Do you know what I'm getting at? And, you know, in fairness to Jimmy, he brought that to Donegal. And they worked hard and focused. And they worked hard at believing they could win. And, you know, I still remember him because I was doing a lot of work in Donegal. I still remember him saying, you know, when he took over that job, within 2 years, we will have won an Ulster final and an All-Ireland. And I think they won two Ulster finals in All-Ireland. Like, he blew that goal out of the water. It's a great example of having clear goals, so does Patrick.
And maybe we'll touch on that as well, Patrick. Goals, goal set. And some people get a wee bit uptight about writing down this big. I know you say the shy goal, you need a big goal, and you'll explain that to us. Give us the importance of that, Patrick, and why should we even think about it?
Yeah, you better explain what a shag is first, Patrick, because I'm trouble over the years. There was a famous book written a number of years ago called Built to Last, or From Good to Great, a guy called Jim Collins, and these guys are academics, but they looked at the best companies in the world, and they discovered that the best organizations in the world had a thing called a BHAG. And you can check that out. Google it. It's actually a registered trademark. BHAG stands for Big, Hairy, Audacious Goal. And these guys maintain that every company needed a big, hairy, audacious goal. And I was rabbiting on in Limerick one day again. And I was saying, you all need a BHAG. And there's this lovely fella, and he knows I tell the story, Adrian McKenna. He's a partner in Moore in Limerick. Brilliant accountant. And I could see Adrian's head nodding and or waving. He didn't agree with me. And Adrian normally agreed with me and stuff. And I said, what's the story, Adrian? I said, I don't believe in a BHAG. And I says, what do you mean? And, you know, this guy Collins has researched it. It said it works, having a big, hairy, audacious goal. He says, I agree with goals. He said, my wealthiest clients all have goals. And he says, I kind of agree with the hairy, audacious ones. He said, But he said, they don't work. And I said, but give me evidence. He says, I'm 18 stone. I've had a BHAG for years to be 13 stone. Hasn't worked. And I could see the whole class nodding. Say, yeah, we all had goals and they didn't work. And I was getting a bit, I was losing the dressing room. But I've learned, if you leave it in the group, the answer will come out. And Adrian puts his hand up again. He says, but you know what would work, Patrick? And I said, thank God. And I said, what would work? He says, you have the hairy, audacious goals, but you have to have discipline. You know, he said, it's one thing having a goal and saying, I want to be 12 stone, but you have to have the discipline and the routine to go and cycle your bike, not to eat all of those chocolate biscuits, to give up the Supermax. Yeah. And he said, you need smut, which was the Irish word. And I wrote the notes that evening and I said, what we need is a smut, hairy, audacious goal. And of course that abbreviates as shag. And it became a great thing during the last recession. The people who came through it had a shag that they would not just survive, but they would thrive in business. So have a smart, hairy, audacious goal. And, you know, you might say that's only theory and that's waffle. And, well, you know, Jimmy McGuinness is a great example in a footballing context, yeah? There are just so many other examples. Goal setting does work. And I'll give an example. Some of your readers might be interested. I'm writing an article called The Life for Riley at the moment. And in it, I talk about, I always remember my youngest son, funnily, he's staying with us at the minute. He's 25 now, but when he was about 2 years of age, I brought him out for a walk on the prom in Galway up in Salt Hill one day. And we were going along. I was pushing him in his buggy. And another kid went by with an ice cream cone in his mouth, yeah? And my young fella says, Dad, he says, I'd love it. I want a cone. I want a cone. And it was about 12 o'clock. I says, Ogie, you can't have a cone. And he was still looking back at your man eating the ice cream. And he says, louder, he says, Dad, I want a cone. And I says, Ogie, it's too near your lunch. It's 12 o'clock. You can't have a cone. And he threw himself out of the old go-kart or whatever we called them in those days. And he threw himself on the ground, Park, and he started effing and blinding. And I had customers and clients, and they were walking around us. And I remember kneeling down. I said, you can have the effing cone, but don't tell your mother. And I think I haven't explained the science. The science is Ogie was sitting, and he saw somebody else with a cone. And that's how powerful something happens in our mind. He saw that goal in such vivid detail. He started drooling at the mouth. Does that make sense? He had to have that goal. Now, as often happens in life, there was an obstacle. Me, I was much bigger than him. And I was a wise man. And I had a good reason why he couldn't have the goal. No, but it's an amazing thing. When your mind conceives and believes in achieving something, it'll do anything to actually achieve it. I mean, Napoleon Hill said that in that wonderful book, Think and Grow Rich. Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. And there was a two-year-old kid. He'd never gone on any course, but the laws of goal setting and current reality. In other words, when I said he couldn't have it, there was a mismatch between the goal he wanted and reality. And his mind played out. So goals... If you want to do anything, if your listeners want to do practical stuff now, I want you to write down, and they'll not forget this, I want you to write down the word GROW, G-R-O-W. And GROW is an acronym for four things. The G is for a goal. All successful people, whether they're mums and dads, parents, whether they're teachers, whether they're athletes, or whether they're business people, they're clear on what they want, what you want. That's the G for goal. The R is very important. The R is for reality. Unless there's tension between your goal and reality, nothing's going to happen. When my young fella couldn't get the, when I told him he couldn't have his goal, that was reality, and it created massive dissonance in his head, yeah? The O is for two things. The O is one, what are your options? So he had an option. His first option was to ask me politely. And when I didn't say yes, his next option was to shout a little louder. And when that didn't work, he threw himself out of the thing and threw all his toys out of the pram. O also stands for obstacle. It's a good thing to look at. What are the obstacles that could prevent you achieving your goal? And this is really stretching your mind. And the W is for the way forward. Or what are you going to do to bring your reality closer to your goal? So that's a one word, four letter acronym that you could change your model of business in overnight. You can use it in everything, Porik. It's a brilliant, brilliant example. And some of the best business people I have worked with, that's really what they base their business on, is that concept of GROW.
We'll come back on some of the people you've worked with, Porik, but take me back to maybe sometimes when you felt down, when you felt there has been challenges, and I suppose how have you got over them yourself? Because obviously when you're lecturing people, who does Porik look to for inspiration? Who does Porik think that can get him through the situation that he's going through to really drive on with things? Because everybody's human.
Yeah, it happened to me once, and you're right. I mean, I work hard and been positive, Padraig, but I was driving to do a gig in Thurles in Tipperary one day, and there was a message on my voicemail, and it was a very simple message, Padraig, I need you to call me. And had that been the mother or the wife or one of the customers or even Padraig Hilferty, I might have said, I'll get back. But it was from my cardiologist, and I kind of, because my dad died of a coronary, I get a check done every so many years. And she said, you need to go for you don't need to, but she said, a cardiac MRI will find anything that's there. And I said, sign me in for it. Look, I'll go for it. And I did it. And I didn't think twice about it. And now she was telling me, I need you to call me. And I came up with 1,000 excuses not to call her. Yeah. And I have a little affirmation that I use, Padraig, and it's DIN. Do it now. And I pulled into the side of the road. I always remember a place outside Loch Ray, a place called Gertie Madden, County Galway. And I rang the number and I prayed to God she wouldn't have been there. And she was there. And her words, very simple, where she said, Padraig, you didn't score a nay in your cardiac MRI. And my life changed. I knew exactly what she, well, I didn't know what she meant, but I this was totally out of the blue. When you get news like that, Padraig, there's a little chimpanzee goes off in your brain and it just starts yakking at you. This is death. This is the worst thing. This is really, really, really bad. And anyway, she had a bit of a plan. I had to go to the Black Rock Clinic and they had to look. Yeah, she said there's you've got a mass or a tumor on your right atrium. So it was serious. There was no sugarcoating it. In fairness to the medics, they don't do that, yeah? So I pulled the car in, and you asked me, who do I use when I'm in trouble? Well, I was in serious trouble that day. And really, Padraig, the only person you can ultimately fall back on is yourself. Now, luckily, I had worked with so many people on a technique, and I did it there that day. And it's a simple little technique, 6 questions, and your listeners can give you a copy of these again. The first question you ask yourself is, what am I worried about? And I remember writing it down. On the newspaper, I had a mass on your right atrium, what the cardiologist had said, yeah? So what I wrote down was, what am I worried about? And the first thing I was worried about was dying, never seeing my kids graduated or married, and I was really worried about dying. That was the first thing. The second thing is, what are the facts? And most of us worry before we have the facts. And the fact was that an MRI had detected a thing in my heart. We didn't know whether that was malignant or benign. And I got really good, and I was theory up to then, but I got really good at it after this, because I went through about an 18-month period where I was sick. And I got really good at not worrying about things till I had the facts, yeah? So I said, I will refuse to worry about this until it was the Friday. I had to go to the Black Rock Clinic and they were doing a procedure to look at the tumor, yeah? The next question you got to ask yourself is, what's the worst that can happen? And the worst that could happen for me was, I could have died. I looked at that. The fourth question is, could I handle that? This is a really big one, you know, because the biggest fear we always have is that we mightn't be able to handle it. And I remember sitting down in the car and saying, well, if I am to die, could I handle it? And I remember saying, well, look, if I have to, I have to. Everyone was going to go that way. And it was an amazing thing, but that only took maybe 60 seconds to do. Having gone through those 4 questions, I got a little bit of space. I shut the amygdala, that old chatterbox in my mind, down, and it enabled me to ask 2 more questions. And the 5th question was, what can I do about it? And I remember writing down again, I can go and give the talk I was meant to give, and I can be my best at that. That was at 11 o'clock that morning, yeah? I can go home and break it to my wife and say, this is not as bad as it sounds. We're going to go and get the best medical attention, which we actually did. And then the final question is, what will I do about it? And, you know, a lot of people are at the moment, Padraig, are saying, oh, what happens in the pandemic when social isolation is over? When will it happen? You know, if you want to go from Letterkenny to Dublin tonight. You don't need to see the whole journey. All you need at 10 o'clock tonight is enough light to see to the next bend of the road. Does that make sense? You only need to see 100 or 200 yards. And it's amazing. You can go anywhere if you can see the next bit. And I always remember saying, yeah, I can see till 11 o'clock me giving my speech in Thurles. And I can see me driving home this evening. And I can get that far. And I began living life like that, looking towards the next bend and putting as much light on that as possible. I find those six questions, Pádraig, I wrote an article about it called The Ultimate Worry Formula. And those six questions, they're really, really powerful. And I think we should all be using them now in terms of the pandemic.
And obviously, Pádraig, that got you kicked in again and got you refocused and re-energized. You used the negative and put it into a positive as best you could. And obviously, you've pointed out that's what a lot of people are going to go through now. And as you said at the start of the interview, some people are unfortunately going to use or lose their businesses. But if you were, suppose, from that experience and coming out of that experience, What was the standout moments for you?
Whoa. What was the standout moments? I don't know, Pádraig. The standout moments, I mean, there were lots of down moments. Like everything in life, we tend to remember the better ones, don't we? And, well, you know something, here's a negative one. When you kind of come up close to losing your business or losing your health or losing your life, as it was in my case, yeah, you sort of say, Jenny Max, if I was only well now, I'd never do this again. It's amazing how quickly we forget. It is amazing how quickly we forget, you know. He's a great friend of mine, Pádraig Ocaja, and he had a serious heart attack before me. And I'll always remember a client of mine one day came running into me, and of course, he said, gee, it's terrible. He says, I saw Ocaja. And I says, what's wrong? I said, I was only talking to him last week. He was fine. I saw him. He says, I saw him at breakfast, and he was eating rashers, and he was eating the fat on it. And, you know, yeah, and it was a great laugh. You know, Pádraig and I got scares that, well, a lot of people have, but they were terrible scares. And we were back to, well, in my case, drinking pints and eating Supermax and eating chips. We tend to forget. And it's a big thing in life. I think it's 98% of people who get that operation on your heart, bypass surgery. Yeah, 98% of them revert to their old habits within 2 years. Isn't that amazing? You know the difference? You know the people who continue, the 2% who do go on a better road, they're all part of a support group. They're all part of a group who meet regularly, get educated regularly, and encourage each other. And I suppose that's what I've discovered. My standout moment, if you want to do well in business, you need a support group. And you need a support group to do probably four things. One, to motivate you, yeah? One, to show you that it's good and life can be good. Two, to educate you. You need to know the basic facts. Yeah, you need to know. And in terms of the pandemic, we need to know that, God forbid, if we get it, this is what we do. And if we take zinc and vitamin D and vitamin B, it will help us. The G is for goals. You need a support group who you can commit your goal to. And the fourth one is the SMOT, that's accountability. You need a group to keep you accountable to what you say. Those are the people who actually, the 2% who change their habits as a result of getting serious heart surgery. So I think, to answer your question, I couldn't respond at the start, Pádraig. It would be to get into that system, get people around you who will motivate you, educate you, and hold you accountable to your goals.
And I've heard you say it in the past, get yourself someone who's not associated with the business. I know some people goes, oh, well, I can't do this and I can't do that, but get someone who can keep you accountable as well, an accountable partner. I think that's what you called it in the past. And some of the business and owners that I had on previously has really leveraged on that as well. They've got their power team in place, and that is someone to give advice to. Paul, again, suppose from your own mentorship and some of the people you've worked with, we're going to talk a wee bit about that now, because you have you've guided some very, very well done, well-to-do business people who have taken some of your information on board and really gone to the top. And maybe you might tell us a wee bit about them.
Yeah, and I'm probably reluctant to name the people, but suffice it to say that they've done extremely well, not just in business, but in sport and in politics and in life in general, you know. But, you know, I would say a certain thing about those people, and they do have common characteristics, Porrick. They're all learners. Remember the great away hurlers, John Connolly and Joe Connolly. And I used to slag the lads. I used to call Joe Fihakesh 20 questions. We used to speak Irish. And, you know, Joe would be asking you, you know, if you had a new way of selling something. And Joe would ask you 20 questions. The really great people are inquisitive. They're very inquisitive. They ask more questions. And it's really, really powerful. That's one characteristic, I would say. Another characteristic is they're enthusiastic. And a lot of people say, yeah, it's okay for that guy in a suit saying be enthusiastic, but we're in the middle of a pandemic and we don't know which way it's going to shape out. Enthusiasm derives from the Greek word entheos, which is to breathe fire into. I often say, if you want to feel enthusiastic, act enthusiastically. And people say, are you suggesting I fake it? And I'm saying, you bloody well do fake it, yeah? I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to come on doing this interview because when you come on to do an interview, it's, you know, will I be able to? Will it go okay? But you get on there and you fake it for a minute or two or three and all of a sudden you forget it. You're actually enthusiastic and it rolls out of its own accord. Does that make sense? It's the great athletes, the great hurlers, the footballers that I've worked with, they'll tell you, you experience this huge inertia or tiredness before a match. And you sort of say, oh, I don't want to leave the dressing room, you know? And you get up there, and within a minute or two, or the first puck you give or you receive, you're in there, and you're in the moment, and the adrenaline is up. So one, I'd say become a great learner. Number two is be enthusiastic. And one of the great people skills, all of the great people, they're very good with people. You don't have to go on any course. I think one of the great skills is, I call it MOFI, M-O-F-I, make others feel important. And to do that, what you've got to be is interested in other people. The really powerful people I've had the pleasure to work with, they're always interested in you. They'll talk to you about your family. They'll talk to you about where you come from. They'll talk to you about your work. They're so interested in you. And you can switch the dynamic in your communications now. Instead of talking more about yourself, get the other person to talk about them. I suppose we're both in a similar line, Porrick, but the guy who really impressed me, I think he's just brilliant, is Michael Parkinson. Do you remember the interviewer?
I do.
It's a beautiful one. I saw the shot just only recently, interviewing Muhammad Ali, and it's about a 15-minute clip, and Ali's at his absolute best. He's beautiful, handsome, young man, vibrant. And Parkinson says one word in the entire clip, and that was only a kind of a validation word, yeah? In other words, it was 99.9% about Ali. And that's why guys like Parkinson, they're wonderful interviewers. And I think we can be much more Parky. Like, the people who impressed me, they were wonderful communicators. Not that they had big words or were intelligent, but they were just interested in other people. So those are three. They're great learners. They're very enthusiastic. And they're wonderful, wonderful communicators.
Well, Porrick, I think we've learned so much over the last hour or so from you. You're an absolute legend of a man. And I've had the privilege of working with you in the past. But where can people find out more about you and what you do? And give us all your details and things like that.
Yeah, well, you might see it behind there, Wigwam. That's a new business myself and a colleague called Colin O'Brien have just set up. It's the notion of a wigwam. It's a safe little space to come together for an hour a week for business support. Yeah, for people who are in business who would like a positive environment to discuss how they're actually going to respond and proflect. That's a word I got from Particle KJ. In other words, think positively about the future. And we have a great one going in Donegal. I know the Skillsnet people, Siobhan Grant, Skillsnet Northwest, they're putting on a program, and we've 9 people, and it's going really, really, really well. So it is. We meet every Tuesday morning, and it's a little bit of us listening to how each other feel. That's the first thing, and it's important to acknowledge our emotions. It's important to acknowledge if we're frightened, to say we're frightened and we're scared. There's no point faking that, yeah. There's part education where I'd share some theories like I've done with you today, theories like Grow or theories like Shag. And the final bit is where they set certain goals and we hold each other gently accountable on a weekly basis. And I'll be honest with you, it came straight from Smith in our last recession, so it did, Porrick, yeah? And if you want to find out more about that, either go to wigwam.ie, wig with a hyphen in the middle, wigwam.ie, and I'd be very happy to speak to you or speak to Michael Tunney in the Leo or speak to Siobhan Grant in Northwest Skillnet. I've been running these programs in Donegal for nearly 25 years, and they always go down really, really well.
And don't forget, Porrick, our podcast goes across Ireland. So is Skillnet across the country? Is there something you're working on there as well?
I mean, today is Wednesday. Yeah, I was with one in Limerick this morning, 9 o'clock. Another one in Galway tomorrow at 9 o'clock. And you know, I'm not a techie. In the last 6 weeks, I've had to learn what it's like to come in front of a Zoom. My wife used to have to set up the WhatsApp group to put all the people into. It is anathema to me. And the downside, the only thing I miss is I miss Ross Nola. And I miss Letterkenny and I miss the drive up to Donegal, but I'm saving myself 20 hours a week on driving time, Porrick. I cannot believe the efficiency in my own business since I've embraced technology. And I was dragged kicking and screaming, and but for the COVID-19 episode, I'd still be traveling to Donegal one day, Cork the next, Dublin the next. And I'm really saying to people of my ilk, who have found technology to be difficult, embrace the bloody thing. We should have done it years ago.
Porrick, it's been a great hour talking to you. You've been very kind with your time. The information you've given us has always been exceptional. And wigwam.ie, that's your website. Our listeners can check you out there. Thanks for joining us on the Breadwinners podcast.
That's all from today's Breadwinners Business Podcast. We strive to bring you practical business knowledge from entrepreneurs and business owners from all over the world. I hope today's podcast was useful. Please tag me over on our Facebook page at the Breadwinners Podcast. But from myself, Porrick Kilfordy, and everyone on the Breadwinners Podcast, thanks for listening.